Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me as ever from North America is Jeff Reinbold. And Jeff, the rookies have hit the practice field in the NFL, and already, as we know in the NFL, there is no off-season, but already we're getting lots of headlines because of that.
Yeah, and some of it really unfortunate, you know, and I think the Dante Fowler situation is the most unfortunate because there's such great expectations for him in Jacksonville and around the league.
Yeah, let's talk about, we're going to look at some news, and we will lead with Dante Fowler Jr., who was the third overall pick in the draft, tore his ACL at the weekend, and by all accounts is out for the entire 2015 season. I know that Melvin Ingram tore his ACL in 2013 and was able to come back. He did that in May and was able to come back in the final month of that season. But by reading all the reports in Jacksonville at the moment, Fowler is out for this year. So we will look at the news. We are going to pick up our State of the Franchise series this week, and we're going to look at the Denver Broncos and the Indianapolis Colts. Then we'll finish off with our final three teams next week, and we will take your questions in the mailbag. So, Jeff, on the Dante Fowler thing, obviously devastating for the Jags. The Jags are not a team that's so good they can afford to, you know, stick a first-round draft pick on the bench for the year. But I've been digging around the CBA this morning ahead of our podcast and having a look at off-season workouts and what you can and can't do, because we've talked about this stuff before. And obviously the phase one is for 2 weeks, and it's basically for players to prepare their bodies. It's like strength and conditioning purposes. They don't even get on the field. Phase two then lasts 3 weeks, and this includes being on the field, but it includes individual player instructions and drills. But basically, you're not allowed to go team drills, and you're not allowed to pit offensive players against defensive players. Phase three lasts 4 weeks, and this is where you are now allowed to sort of practice against one another, provided there is no contact. So I'm reading all of that out, and then I'm going to say afterwards, it must be different for rookies, because this was a rookie camp. And Fowler got injured in 11-on-11 drills. I mean, it wasn't full contact, but you'd say he was going sort of 75%. And he was blocked by the offensive tackle as he got injured. So, first of all, you know, it obviously is different, but should it be different? And, you know, what's the value in going at this speed, you know, on May the 8th and 9th?
Well, I think there's a tendency for the coaches, certainly when you know, go through this process called the draft and all the time that you spend, all the off-season evaluation, and then you fall in love with the guy to the point where you're going to draft him first. You want to get him on the field, and you want to see what he can do, and you want to kick the tires. Well, you know, the reality of it is, Neil, that these guys' bodies aren't ready for this coming right off, you know, off the street. You know, they've been training, yes, all of, you know, they're in condition, somewhat in condition, but then to go out and get put in that environment, you know, where, again, everybody at the pro level, particularly at the NFL level, everybody at the NFL level is so much bigger and stronger and faster than, you know, the guys you compete against in college. And that's, you know, I think this is one of the things that the league's going to have to address, because, you know, it's a horrible loss to have, you know, a big-time player go down, but a first-round draft choice, that is really, you know, to lose a guy for the entire season is devastating to your team. And, you know, it's going to be tough on the Jags to, you know, to kind of bounce back from this, because there's a spot, there's a hole that they had projected filled, and now, you know, after 40 minutes of, you know, his first mini camp, he's done for the year.
We'll talk about the Jags and how they bounce back from this this blow in a second, Jeff, but I was talking this morning to NFL UK editor Nick Pike, and you know, producer of this podcast as well, and I wondered, and we both wondered, and we thought it'd be good to ask you this, whether there's any impact in the fact that, in a way, Fowler has already just been through a season. that draft process of preparing for the draft is a little bit of a season in itself. I remember at the end of Jonathan Cyprian's rookie year in Jacksonville, the safety for the Jags, I asked him about what kind of year he'd had, and he said, well, I went through a season before I even began the season with the Jags in terms of preparing for the draft. I know this is a fluky injury, and I know injuries can happen at any time, but could that be a factor?
Well, I think all of those things contribute to it. You know, the fact that they do train so hard and they are so concerned about, you know, making sure that they're ready for all the testing that goes on. So it's unlike the college, it's unlike the preparation that they do in the off-season programs. You talked about, you know, how the off-season program is basically tailored and tapered to get you to OTAs, mini camps, and then on into the preseason. Well, the training that these guys do is tailored to get them ready for the combine, and that's a totally different, you know, they work on totally different sets of exercises. You know, the prescriptions, the exercise prescriptions that they get from the strength coaches are different. The time that they spend in the, you know, running, and it's all totally different. And so now here comes a kid out of a football season, you know, and again, if you play at the University of Florida, you play in a bowl game and you've got you've got a long season, then a bowl game, then you go right into your combine training. Obviously, something's got to give at some point. And I think, again, these are the kinds of things that they need to address, because the rookies, you know, now in today's NFL, those rookies, those guys are counted on as being players. And you know, again, whether it's, you know, Dante Fowler or any of the guys that we've lost in our recent history, because to ACLs in particular, I think there's a trend here that the Players Association needs to address.
I'm going to take one of the questions out of the mailbag now, Jeff. It comes from Joe Deloxley, who says, who should the Jaguars recruit to replace Dante Fowler? And I think this is important, because maybe Jags fans shouldn't be, you know, finding the nearest bridge and jumping off it. Gus Bradley, of course, as you would expect, has been very upbeat and very, you know, very positive. But I will put this positive spin on it. Chris Clemens already is the holder of that Leo position in Jacksonville in their defense. He does turn 34 in October, I accept that, but he had 8 sacks and 4 forced fumbles a year ago. Ryan Davis is a third-year player who the Jags expected to provide that depth at that position. He had 6.5 sacks and 2 forced fumbles. 4.5 of those sacks came from week 8 onwards. There are a couple of other players that can play that role. Now, if you're going to be, the counter-argument to that is, well, if they were so happy there, why'd they spend the third overall pick on the position? But, you know, this is where we now have to see that next man up mentality.
Yeah, there's no question. And what they can do there, I think, Neil, is they can do that by committee a little bit. You're going to have to guard Chris Clemens's legs. You're going to have to really handle him correctly and make sure that you don't burn him up, because he is, you know, at an advanced age for a, you know, guy at that position. And he's going to have to be smart about how he prepares each week, and then make him, and, you know, do it by committee, make it a kind of a rolling situation, and give them the best opportunity to play as fresh and as hot as they can by, you know, sharing the reps. And you know, obviously they felt like Fowler was the best defensive player on the board, right? Because, again, there were a lot of good players available at the third pick. So this is going to be a blow to them. But I think it's a blow that, because they've got some veterans at the position, it's not like they're totally void there. And, you know, they'll have to just manage each other and manage the reps and manage the role and, you know, continue to work with Fowler in the offseason until they can get him healthy.
One other bit of news from the rookie minicamps. Jeff Hoyerman, who is a tight end from Ohio State, third-round draft pick of the Denver Broncos, tears his ACL in special teams drills as well, was a potential target for Peyton Manning. So, he has a long road back as well. Jeff, the Wells report is finally out. We know that, according to the report, and they use the phrase quite often, more probable than not, the Patriots were aware of Deflategate and all that went with it, and so was Tom Brady. I mean, some of this is a little bit sketchy, a little bit of a grey area, but you know, this is probably actually just before I ask what you think they should do with Tom Brady. The commissioner didn't want this one landing on his lap, did he? I mean, with all of the stuff that's gone on in the past, now he's got the golden boy of the league, and he's potentially got to ban him.
Oh, you know what? This has gotten so much airplay here, over here in North America, and so many people are talking about it, and everybody's weighing in with their comments. Here are the things that I think are the interesting pieces of this whole deal. Number one, the relationship between Mr. Kraft and the commissioner.
Yeah.
Now that's gotten a tremendous amount of scrutiny, and the commissioner has come under great criticism for being so friendly with Mr. Kraft. And Mr. Kraft has been, you know, let's face it, he's been one of the commissioner's biggest supporters.
Yeah.
So now it's his team that's you know, in the crosshairs of the Wells report. And then again, you've got you know, don't even factor Belichick in, because he wears a black cape for most people in the league anyway. But you take, then you got the golden boy. I mean, the chosen one. And I think you saw Mercedes Lewis's comment that he called Tom Brady like America's quarterback. So
yeah.
You're now treading on very, very, very interesting, you know, place to go, because do you suspend him? Now, there's been calls from a number of media people here that they need to really jump in and make this a long, if not a season-long suspension, a long suspension of Brady. Some people are saying it'll be, the commissioner will knuckle under and it'll be a one-game slap on the wrist, and you know, he'll be back for week two against Buffalo. So, you know, I think this is really going to be interesting to see the way it plays out, because there is, I think, an awful lot of attention again focused on the commissioner's office and how he is going to respond to a controversy. And goodness gracious, has he had a bunch of controversies in the last 12 months.
Yeah, and damned if he does and damned if he doesn't, Jeff, because there'll be Patriots fans who say, well, you haven't got enough evidence, and there'll be fans of 31 other teams who say, well, don't give Tom Brady special treatment. So it's going to be a tough one.
I mean, just the wording of the Wells report just opened up this huge Pandora's box, because when like you say, it is highly probable that he knew what was going on. I mean, it's a lot of legalese, but man, oh man, I tell you what, it has been the topic of discussion in North America here for the last 4 or 5 days, and I'm certainly sure that until the commissioner's office actually comes forth with with what they're going to do with Brady, it'll be even chewed up even more. And then once it comes down, everybody's going to reevaluate and weigh in on what they think the commissioner did right and wrong.
Okay, Jeff, one final piece of news then. The news that Ed Reed has officially announced his retirement. We know he didn't play in 2014. When we look back on Ed Reed's career, I always think, before you think about all the numbers and all of the accolades, this was the player that Bill Belichick would have loved to have. You know, we're following on from the Patriots there. He always said that Ed Reed was one of his favourite players. And I think when I think of Ed Reed, sixth all-time with the interceptions, 64 of them. But it was what he did with the football, Jeff, when he got it. He turned, I think he was a former high school running back, and he turned into a running back when he had those interceptions. He had the most interception yards, return yards in NFL history. Your thoughts on Ed Reed?
Well, I tell you what, it's interesting, because Ed Reed comes from, he went to high school, the little high school down in the River Parish south of New Orleans called Destrehan.
Right.
Destrehan's had great players. That was one of the schools that I recruited when I was at SMU. And the stories about Ed Reed at Destrehan High School were legendary. I mean, here was a guy, Neil, that was such a great athlete that as a high school player, he would actually participate in both baseball and football in the spring at the same time. And while football was practicing, he would, on a day that baseball played at home, he would be the designated hitter on the baseball team. So he would be over on the football field practicing, and they would send a manager over to get him if he was to bat that inning. And he would take off it, and this is a true story now, he would take off his helmet and his shoulder pads, and because they practice in shorts in Louisiana, put on his baseball pants, baseball shirt, go over, take his at bat, and then come back after he played, you know, through that inning, and come back and practice football that same day. And so, I mean, the guy was phenomenal. And you talk to the people there, and this is a league that, you know, LeRon Landry came out of, and Mike Skyfors came out of. I mean, this is, they're great players, tons of great players in this league, and they said that nobody impacted the game like he did. Now, he comes from a little town called St. Rose, and St. Rose is a little, just, it's really tough area. I mean, tough area. And, you know, he's battled through an awful lot of personal adversity, too. His brother took his own life. I mean, there are a lot of things about Ed that, you know, you don't read about. And one of the things that the football coach told me was that Ed Reed, every summer, would have the entire Destrehan High School coaching staff come to Baltimore, and he would put on a camp for kids in the Baltimore area, and all the proceeds of the camp, every single penny that the camp made, he gave back to Destrehan High School. And, you know, those are the stories that you don't hear about,
yeah,
you know, when you talk about these guys. Obviously, everybody knows what a great player he was. He had unbelievable anticipation at safety, could almost, you know, he would be out of position from a technical standpoint so yep. many times, but then you just go, wow, what a great play. And, you know, interestingly enough, when late in his career, when Rex had a chance to, you know, reunite with him, he brought him to New York just hoping that he could bring that veteran that veteran experience and all of that knowledge to the young safeties that he was going to play with at New York. And you know, again, like I say, the thing about Ed Reed to me is not only the player he was, but just all the other things that he did off the field. And, you know, what a combination he and Ray Lewis, you know, Simba and Mufasa. I don't know if we'll ever see a combination down the middle linebacker and free safety like that again.
You want to talk about leadership? Well, those two together on the same team. 9 Pro Bowls. You did win a Super Bowl in that final season of Ray Lewis's 2012. That's Ed Reed, who he's pretty good on TV, Jeff, as well. He's got the whole package going on, so it looks like that'll be where he heads next. We're going to head to our state of the franchise now and look at the Denver Broncos then. So we'll do the Broncos and the Colts this week, and then the final three teams, the Packers, the Seahawks, and the Patriots next week. So the Broncos, they went 12-4. They won the AFC West, but then they lost very disappointingly in the divisional round of the playoffs to the Indianapolis Colts. Jeff, we can get into all of the different positions of this team, and I'm sure we will, but I just can't get those images of Peyton Manning struggling down the stretch out of my head. Peyton's going to be back in 2015. I think shortly after he announced his return, I made some kind of joke on Twitter about maybe you don't play him in November and December or something, or you don't play him in October and November, because, you know, I just remember he was a spent force by the end of the season.
Well, I think you're exactly right. You know, we just talked about managing a veteran's reps when we talked about Chris Clemens with Jacksonville,
yeah.
And I think it's even more important here. Now, here's the dilemma, I think. You know, I was spending some time, you know, actually going through my mind this morning, you know, as a coach. You got a double-edged sword here because you got such a great preparation player,
yeah.
A guy whose work habits have been so impeccable for so long, and he pushes himself really to the limit all the time. Well, as you get older, you know, you have to learn to train, not just prepare, you know, it, but not harder, but prepare smarter. And I think that's going to be the critical factor for him. For example, I would not be surprised if Kubiak doesn't put him on a throw count. You know, we talk about pitchers in baseball on a pitch count. They only want him to throw a certain number of pitches a game because you got to last for, you know, 162 games in a baseball season. Mm. Well, the same thing's true now with Peyton. You could see his arm strength start to fall off as we got into November and then certainly in December.
That'll apply to practice, won't it, Jeff? Not just games.
Yeah, it's, you know, you got to understand, he is a guy that has always in the off season spent hours and hours and hours with the receivers on their own, working, throwing balls. Well, you only have so many throws in an arm, and as that arm gets older, the number of, you know, high velocity throws he can make decreases. It's just the way nature works. So now, if you're Denver, I think it would really be smart for Denver to really take a hands-on approach and really manage his throws as he goes into, you know, this preseason and then training camp, and then certainly even during the season. Maybe not on Sundays, but certainly during the week. Give him an extra day off. He's physically, he's in such great shape, takes such great care of himself.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of things I think will really help him. And, you know, he's lucky he's got Kubiak as his head coach, because here's a guy who played the position, understands, and knows Peyton very well.
And Peyton's got to learn some of his own limitations, Jeff. We saw some of the game last year where he told Brock Osweiler to sit back down, in a blowout. I'm not coming out of this game. And, I think maybe he's got to say, well, we've won this game. I'm quite happy he's spending the fourth quarter on the sidelines. I mean, I know that the counter argument to that is, well, Peyton probably is thinking that, how much he loves the game, and he's probably coming to the very end. He doesn't want it described as a farewell tour, but it could end up being just that. I mean, they're playing some fantastic teams this year, and the quarterback matchups, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Andrew Luck, Big Ben, I mean, they're all on Peyton's radar this year. But maybe he does need to sort of know when to get out of games.
I think there's a lot of fact in that. I think he's got to tone down his hyper-competitiveness and recognize that he does need to step away when the game's over, when it's a blowout. Get out of the game. Don't expose yourself to those hits. Don't expose yourself to more plays. Get off, spend your days off, in the tub. Spend more time in the ice, maybe a little less time in the film room, and maybe a little more time in the ice tub. Although, if I know Peyton, he'll have a way that he'll have the film rigged up so he can sit in the ice tub and watch the tape. But, I just really think that it's important for him and for that franchise, because here's the reality of it, Neil. When you're talking about the Broncos, they have a very small window now, because it's going to be a huge, whether it's Osweiler or they bring somebody in or whatever they do at quarterback after Peyton, it's not going to be the same. You've got some aging players, on the other side, DeMarcus Ware, those guys. They need now to win. And everything has got to be focused on this year, because there's no guarantee that you're going to get him for another year.
No, we've seen what it's like to follow a legend at quarterback. Jay Fiedler struggled to do it in Miami. Bobby Brister struggled in Denver after John Elway. What do you think of the cast around him then, Jeff? Because obviously Emmanuel Sanders had a great season. Demaryius Thomas is an elite receiver. But looks like there's no Wes Welker, so it's those two leading the charge at receiver. And of course, Julius Thomas goes out at tight end. In comes Owen Daniels. So is that group, in terms of his passing game targets, better, about the same? They've had some hits and losses. They've got good players, but they've lost some good players as well.
Well, I think the reality of it is, obviously Julius Thomas was a receive first tight end, and I think when you bring Owen Daniels and James Casey in, who they signed in the offseason, I think Casey's a key guy here, because those guys have history with Kubiak. They know what he wants from the tight end position. They're better blockers than Julius was. And so I think that those are kind of under the wire additions that Denver's made that are very, very positive for them. And then, people got to understand, Emmanuel and Demaryius, that is the number one, by a long shot, receiving tandem in the National Football League. And we talked about great tandems. There's no tandem better right now. And Emmanuel's ability to move around and play outside, play inside, he really is the key to this thing. And I'm so proud of, watching him develop. And, I just saw a thing yesterday where he has now been chosen as one of the top 100 players in the National Football League. And interestingly enough, Neil, they talk about his speed all the time on this interview, the players that are, talk about how fast he is. Well, he doesn't have great long speed. I mean, he was a 4.53 guy at the combine. He's got tremendous competitive speed, and he's an absolute warrior. He will run, if he runs 4.4 at the start of the game, he's going to run 4.4 on the 65th play of the game. And that's one of the reasons why he's able to separate over the course of the game. He just out-conditions the players he plays against.
Cody Latimer will be a player the Broncos expect to step up in his second year at receiver. They've got C.J. Anderson, seems to have usurped Monte Ball at running back. So, rounding out this offense, which was fourth ranked in the NFL, Jeff, it's still a team that's going to score points, isn't it?
Yeah, they're going to score points, and again, I think that they're going to probably run the ball maybe a little bit more. It'll be interesting to see if Kubiak doesn't bring some balance to the offense a little bit, because, you know, he's always been a guy that zone scheme and, you know, ability to throw play action. Here's the thing, people aren't, I think there's a misconception out there right now that Peyton won't be able to play in that offense because, you know, again, so much of it is bootlegs and you know. But let's go back to Peyton's glory years in Indianapolis, and what were they so good at? Play action.
Yeah, play action. The stretch play and then play action off it.
Exactly, Neil. That stretch play, and you just see him hand that ball way out there and you know, entice the linebackers to jump over and the safeties to jump down on the run, and then he'd hit you with a post cut over the top to Reggie Wayne. Well, you know, he's got those big-time threats outside, and better blocking tight ends, and I think that you're going to see a little bit of a new attack here under Kubiak than you saw with Adam Gase.
Defense was ranked third in the NFL, Jeff. They've got DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller coming off the edges, and they've added Shane Ray. They moved up to grab the pass rusher from Missouri. So, you know, defense in the secondary, they've got Pro Bowlers, three of them in the secondary, and Aqib Talib, T.J. Ward, Chris Harris in the slot. Tried to add some youth. I mean, are you happy with that side of the ball?
Well, I think they're very much like the offense. They're in a win now mode, and you know they've got to get 8-10 sack year out of DeMarcus Ware, and then Shane Ray can be that situational guy early in his career and rely on his great first step and speed off the edge. And you know, I'm sure you're going to see some exotic packages now within the 3-4, where you're going to have Ware and Ray, you know, on maybe on the same side, and you know, they've got pressure on the other side. Von Miller is an unbelievable pass rusher, so it creates an awful lot of problems for the offense when you've got three guys in a 3-4 system like that that can make plays. And, you know, and again, remember who the defensive coordinator is going to be. And you know,
Wade's back. Yeah,
Wade is back, and Wade is, you know, there's nobody that knows the 3-4 better than he. Yeah. And you know, his ability to do exotic things with it. So I would not be surprised if you don't see, you know, Ray on one side, Ware on the other side, Miller all over the place, in the middle, walking around, creating matchup problems. Who's the mic? All the problems that 3-4 can create. You got the best guy in the world doing it, and I think Denver's defense will be nasty.
They're in win now mode, Jeff. Can they win it all? Just to conclude on the Broncos.
You know what, I think they'll be there if they can keep Peyton healthy and manage him over the course of the thing. I just wonder about this. You know, I'm haunted like you by those images in December and January where it looked like it was even hard for him to throw the ball much past 15 yards down the field. You know, we saw him float some, you know, some fade routes that you know, usually he throws on a line. And, you know, if that is going to be the case where he's going to struggle like that throwing the football, then I think it's going to be tough. Although I think, as we said, I think they'll be a better overall football team this year.
All right, let's move on to the Indianapolis Colts then. So the Colts went 11-5 in 2014. They won the AFC South. Then they beat the Cincinnati Bengals and the Denver Broncos in the playoffs. And what pleased me in that game, Jeff, those two games, was that there was some surprising physicality to the Colts. You saw them tackle well. They were able to run the football. And then they go into the AFC Championship game and they remind us all that they're actually not quite physically there yet in terms of being able to take that step to a Super Bowl. So, you know, my main man, Andrew Luck, gives them a chance to win every week. They have added more pieces around him. I still wonder if they are able to stop a team running all over them. And I wonder if they're going to be able to keep their franchise quarterback upright.
Well, I think those are the big questions. You know, to me, the biggest question is, are they going to get better on defense? And you look at some of the offseason moves that they've made. They brought in some guys, you know, Trent Cole being the first one that you want to talk about. Yeah. Obviously, he's going to improve that pass rush, which looked anemic at the end of the season. And, you know, I think that's a big plus for them. And I think here's another team that's operating under the assumption that the window's very, you know, very, very, very tight, because the additions that they brought in were older guys that hopefully they can get a year or 2 years out of and push them over the hump. And, you know, there was a lot of criticism, you know, of Indianapolis taking a receiver first in this draft. And you know, everybody's saying, well, you know, they're so receiver heavy. Why would they take a receiver when they have so many needs on the offensive line and linebacker and all these other places? Well, obviously he was the best player available at that pick. And you can never have too many weapons, in my opinion. And, you know, the last year that you just think about it in these terms, you know, subtract Hakeem Nicks and inject a young guy with great speed and tremendous after the catch, you know, ability.
Yeah.
And I think that's something you got to do, because they're not going to, you know, even though there were some really good players available at that pick, some linebackers in particular, I still think that was a good decision for them, because they're going to win on offense. They're not going to win on defense. No one defensive player was that dominant at that choice that he would have, you know, changed the whole personality of that defense.
I think everyone around the league accepts that Andrew Luck is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL now, Jeff, and maybe we don't have to spend as much time on that. I mean, you're welcome to throw in your thoughts on Andrew, but I think maybe one of the most important additions to this team is going to be the guy he's handing the ball off to in Frank Gore, because, you know, they do have Boom Heron and they've got Zerlin Tipton and some of these other bit part running backs, but I think Frank Gore's going to have a point to prove still, and he's going to bring that physicality to the offense.
Yeah, and I think that there's you know, even a bigger thing with Frank Gore. Frank Gore is going to bring a winning attitude to you. And the sourness of, you know, Richardson will be washed clean from that locker room, and they'll be in a situation where, you know, here's a guy, a veteran, knows how to win, been a winner since he was at the University of Miami. He's gonna be a force, I think, for that locker room. And, you know, again, I just really think that's a positive, a really, really big positive for them at an area. And I'm a Boom Heron fan. I think Boom Heron gives you some things, and he can be that second back. But now you've got a guy that when you need yards in critical situations, here's a guy that historically throughout his career has been able to get you those yards.
Where are the concerns on defense, Jeff? I mean, you mentioned a little bit about, we've talked about the physicality. I think they're good at corner, aren't they, with Greg Toler and Vontae Davis? But we saw Dwight Lowry get exposed a little bit in the playoffs at safety. I mean, where are the holes on defense?
Well, I think, you know, again, the guy that I thought really was that they needed to move last year when I'm watching them at the end of the season was Landry at safety. He is at the point now where he's, you know, really was a coverage liability. And, you know, so they've moved on there, which I think will be an upgrade.
Sorry,
for him.
That's what I meant. Yeah, LeVon Landry, yeah.
Yeah, I think that really, when you look at the thing, Trent Cole will give them juice up their pass rush, which they really needed. I think they're okay inside. You know, they just got in the playoffs. They just got in a situation where they were like, they looked to me like a fighter that had gotten punched and stunned and couldn't fight his way out of the corner. And their nastiness on defense is what, you know, what I thought was lacking. And I think, again, Trent Cole, we talk all the time about him being a pass rush guy. Well, he's also very good against the run. So I think that single signing itself will really, really help them.
So as we look at the Super Bowl chances, Jeff, I mean, any team that gets to the championship game, you're going to put them in the Super Bowl mix. If this is a quarterback league, I mean, does Andrew Luck give them a chance to be a Super Bowl contender? Do you see them having that Super Bowl caliber team now?
I think anytime you got one of the top quarterbacks in the league, you got a chance to get to the Super Bowl, because, you know, I mean, it's there only been what, a couple times that you've had a Super Bowl champion with a guy that you wouldn't consider a top quarterback. I mean, you know, Tampa Bay did it and Baltimore did it, but that's two outliers over the course of NFL history. So obviously having him is, to me, the biggest key for this franchise. He'll continue to grow. He'll continue to work to, you know, better his decision making, cut down on interceptions. He's still, you know, even though people don't talk about it, he's still, you know, as an athlete at the position, an extremely good player. He can move around and make plays with his legs. And again, you know, again, this team, I like this team. I think Pagano does a great job getting them ready to play.
Well coached, aren't they?
Yeah, extremely well coached. I think this is a very close football team. You watch them, and there's good chemistry on this football team. And now it's just about, you know, they've moved on from Reggie Wayne. They've moved on from Landry. They've moved on from some older guys. The only area that still I just got it, don't have a great feel for is the offensive line. You know, that is not a, for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to. And they made a strong push for Lyle Collins. They just haven't been able to attract that quality guy that you're looking for, a couple guys that you're looking for to help keep him on his feet.
Jeff, you know who they should sign, don't you? I'm always fighting for Andrew's cause. I'm always protecting him. You know, I'm always fighting his corner. That wouldn't last long, would it? Let's move on to the mailbag before you reply. Let's have a couple of questions then, and I've got, just to finish us off, there was a question here from Rob Donaldson, Jeff, who says, is there any culture in the NFL for teams trying to draft or sign players to deliberately stop other teams strengthening? And I've seen a case of this, read about this in the NFL draft. So the Baltimore Ravens, they traded up to grab the tight end in the second round, Max Williams, knowing full well that the Pittsburgh Steelers loved him. There you are, you're strengthening your team in one aspect, and you're weakening a division rival at the same time. I mean, this does happen, doesn't it, Jeff?
It happens in that regard. Now, again, had Baltimore, completely not needed a tight end, let's say Owen Daniels had stayed,
yep,
and right, and they had Pitt and they had Owen Daniels, and no need for a third tight end, then it's less likely to happen because you know those draft picks are very, very valuable. But what's really sweet for a guy like Ozzie Newsome is to, as you say, trade to get a chance, to get a spot where you help yourself and hurt your fiercest opponent. So I'm sure there were high fives all over the Baltimore draft room when they made that decision and made that trade and then got Max Williams.
All right, Jeff, you know Jason Garrett very well. We both spent some time with him, good friend of yours. Dave Shaw asks this question. He says, are you guys worried that the Dallas Cowboys have signed so many very talented players with character issues? Now, since we last spoke, they have signed Lyle Collins as well. Now, we're not saying he's got a character issue, but there is an off-the-field issue that's still to be resolved following the death of his former girlfriend. So, tell us what pressure this is going to put on Jason Garrett.
Well, first of all, I'm not worried about it because I'm not going to get that 4 o'clock in the morning phone call. And I hope Jason doesn't. To be honest with you, I hope Jason doesn't either. No. But, this is all organizations have their own philosophy on how they deal with these kinds of things. And the Cowboy way has always been, and you can go back and look at it historically under Jerry, they're going to take chances on character issues. They feel like, a Gregory guy, Gregory, the tremendous pass rusher that they took out of Nebraska, who's had, substance abuse issues, they just feel like, hey, he's worth the problem. Greg Hardy, who's under suspension for 10 games, they feel like he's worth the potential problems. Dez Bryant didn't come in to the NFL with a sparkling resume for off-the-field behavior. And so, again, this is an organization that feels like they can deal with those kinds of guys. I know that they work real hard inside the organization to try and get these guys over the hump socially, or how they handle themselves off the field and what they do, in their practice habits and all those other things, wherever the holes in these guys are. But Jerry just really feels, he believes that give me the best player and then let me work with them to try and, handle their and manage their off-field stuff.
One last question, Jeff, and this is from Mark Sugar, who says, which current players in the league would make good general managers or future head coaches? Now, that's quite hard to pluck out names, of players just randomly. But, I do think it'd be interesting to get your take on this. I've seen lots of things where they say that Peyton Manning would make a great head coach because he's got all of the recall of the playbook. He loves the game. He's incredible production himself. And then other people straight away say, well, of course he would go into TV. Why would you choose coaching over TV? I mean, you've done both, so I mean, this is a factor for players who want to move on, isn't it?
Well, two guys, when I saw that question on the mailbag this morning, and I was hoping that you were going to select it because I think there are two guys that immediately jump out at me as I think guys that have that kind of demeanor and that, you know, that kind of intelligence, because it takes a high degree of intelligence, you know, to be a general manager in the National Football League. And you know, I think Peyton certainly is, you know, I mean, you look at his pedigree, he's the son of an NFL legend. He, you know, is going to be a Hall of Fame player. I think he could be the, you know, if you want to say the next John Elway, the next guy that ascends into the front office. And you know, I think he's very, very savvy. I think he handles himself extremely well in the press. All of the things that you, you know, that are prerequisites if you're going to be a general manager.
Yeah.
And then I would certainly love to see, you know, Andrew Luck get a crack at that, because there again is a Stanford guy and, you know, grew up a son of an NFL player and, you know, will have a Hall of Fame career. And I think those two guys in particular are guys that, you know, you look at and you go, man, I think that, you know, there's a place for them in the game when the game is over with. And, you know, in terms of coaching shoots, you know, more and more you're starting to see these guys that step off the field and, you know, step into the coaching ranks because, you know, the money now, frankly, here's the biggest reason. Back 20 years ago when I was getting started in pro football, it was hard to get players to become coaches because the money wasn't that good. And the hours are legendary.
Yeah.
So, but now the money's more in, you know, more in line with the amount of time that they spend. And, you know, again, we're starting to see those guys trending now in, you know, the Todd Bowles kind of guys that step off the field, step into coaching, and are now ascending into the head coaching jobs around the league.
Okay, that's the mailbag then. Jeff, just before we finish off this week, I've had clarification from the NFL New York office while we've been recording this podcast about, we talked about Dante Fowler and the rules that apply to NFL teams during the off-season program. And the rules apparently for rookie minicamps are the same as phase three of the off-season program for veteran camps, which means that you're not allowed any live contact, but you can have 7-on-7, 9-on-9, and 11-on-11 drills. And that's what we saw the Jags having 11-on-11 drills when Dante Fowler was injured. Jeff, we're out of time, so it's draft week, isn't it, for you guys?
It is. We have we're actually stacking our board today. We've been grinding away at our draft for, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks. And tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the evening, the draft starts, and we have 7 rounds. And it's going to be fun because this is an opportunity. As always, when anytime you're drafting, it's an opportunity for a young kid to, you know, all of a sudden his name get called on national television, and there he is, and he becomes. He becomes a professional football player, something that, you know, all of us have dreamed about in our lives and few are ever able to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good luck to you and to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Until next week, Coach, say goodbye.
Hey, now, wait a second. I'm going to get you. The Parrot Cast is back now. Next week, we will be coming to you live from the 808 state, Hawaii.
Excellent.
And I'll be doing my Pro Bowl preview show.
Jeff, please, no pictures with the shirt off, because all I feel is bad about myself. Just keep the shirt on, man. Say goodbye,
all
will
right,
you?
Mate. All right. You take care.
You got to say aloha, Jeff.
Aloha.